if you haven't heard. Triple M rocks Test Cricket.
Boy, boy, was that something to behold.
And it sounds a little different.
That is a brutal ball.
Settle in, get yourself a brandy.
Triple M, rockin' Test Cricket.
And after almost losing the unlosable, Australia takes a 1-0 lead into the second test.
It's Yorker. Oh! I reckon that's out. It is out.
Live from the Triple MCG, it's day two of Australia and Pakistan.
Triple M. Triple M.
Triple M rocks Test Cricket.
Yes, and welcome to the MCG, and we can say that it is not raining. We're going to get plenty of play here in Melbourne. My name is Gus Wall, and right next to me is Kerry O'Keefe, and the Queen of Triple M Cricket, Isha's with us as well. And thank God, yesterday was a hard day for us as cricket lovers. We had to go off just after 3 o'clock with Pakistan 4 for 142. Unfortunately, we couldn't get back on the field again, but everything is set fine now. And Kerry, are you looking forward to the second day of this Boxing Day Test match?
Very much so, Gus. Good morning to you. Good morning, Isha. Good morning, everybody. Yes, look, disappointing to have the final session washed out last night. This was going to well up into a big day, probably for Australia, because they were just starting to get the lengths right as the day wore on, and Jackson Bird was on fire. I thought he could have cleaned up late yesterday had there been play, but there wasn't. And this morning we come back at 4 for 142, Azhar Ali. He was the king, one of the kings in their second innings in Brisbane, and Asad Shafiq, who almost pinched the game for them up at the Gabba. And Sarfraz Ahmed, this Gilchrist-like number seven who will come out swinging. I can't wait for that. Australia got the lengths right yesterday. The day's set reasonably fair. There's cloud cover, humidity. It's conditions that Isha Guha would have bowled well in.
Thanks, Gary. That's very kind of you. Yeah. It was a little bit overcast yesterday, and we saw the ball moving around. And Australia, certainly when they pitched it up a bit more, they caused a few problems for the Pakistani batsmen. But they were very patient, Pakistan. I think it was like after the first 15 overs, they'd only scored 30. And then they started to build their momentum. But every time they did that, they lost a wicket. They lost their two experienced men in Yunus Khan and Misbah Ul Haq. And it was the timing of those wickets as well. There was the one of Babar Azam, just that the ball before lunch was taken. So from their point of view, they just need to, once they get into a position of strength, they need to be a little bit more ruthless. For Australia, well, yes, they're going to be feeling good out there. Overcast conditions, get the ball moving around. Jackson Bird was sensational in that last spell. Getting the ball, he was using off cutters and getting the ball to nip around off the seam. And Hazelwood, who's been outstanding over the last couple of tests, well, since South Africa as well. Stark will just bowl with a bit of aggression. And Nathan Lyon, he's the cult hero, isn't he, for Australia. Gets a wicket with his third ball after everyone's shouting his name and screaming, "Nice, Gary." And I'm sure they'll be wanting more of that today. And also, good to see the Richies here in town, Gus.
Richies are here in town. And guess who else? Just look over your shoulder, Ish. The big man, Mick Malloy, has joined us. How are you, Mick?
I'm very good, guys. Can I just say something off the bat? I'm very sorry that George Michael is dead. Mm-hmm. But if I hear "Wake Me Up Before I Go-Go" one more time on the TV or the radio today, I am going to lose it.
That's too soon, Mick.
So can we be respectful and acknowledge he's dead, but not play it? Not play it.
Is that even more so because you got a bit of a sore head this morning?
No. No, I
Merv Hughes
feel all
is
right.
Dancing to "Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go."
Fresh as a daisy.
The back of the box, you see? Merv Hughes, he's dancing to "Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go."
Okay, that's a sight no one needs to see.
4 for 192. They're putting on a good fight here, Pakistan. They haven't lost a wicket today. 50 runs added to the total. Unfortunately, though, the covers are on. Not the full covers, just the light covering at the moment. There's been a sprinkling of rain. It's not like heavy rain is on the radar. Hopefully, it's not a very long delay, although it's just sort of hanging around the MCG. Mark Howard with you, the great big Victorian Merv Hughes, and one of Australia's, if not Australia's, funniest man, Mick Malloy.
Good Lord. Thank you very much. This is why tests need to be 5 days, not four, don't you think, for rains like this? We know why. Why do tests go 5 days?
Well, they used to be timeless, didn't they?
They used to be timeless.
They used to be 8 days, someone told me.
Well,
eight back
days.
In the '30s.
No, there was a test called off somewhere, I think it was South Africa or England, where a side had to get back and catch the boat home. So that's the only reason.
That was the end.
That was the end of the test match. So they could have gone through. My first test match against India in Adelaide, at the Adelaide Oval, 1985.
Yep.
Sunil Gavaskar, 160 not out. If that had been a timeless test match, he'd still be batting today.
He'd still be out there on 10,002.
He was a gun player. But, yeah, it's 5 days. I suppose the thing about the test matches, the reason they're over 5 days is give you a chance to win. So give both sides a chance to win. And The great thing for mine for Test cricket is you may not be good enough to win the game, but you can be good enough to stop the opposition from winning. So there's a lot of tactics involved, a lot of skill and a lot of intelligence needed by your captains.
Murph, can I ask, what's the longest spell you ever bowled on that one? If we've talked a bit about the workload for bowlers these days and how it all goes. Can you tell me, do you remember what your longest spell?
Yeah, I reckon I bowled a session, so 16 overs in Perth, and that was a...
That's like a session.
Yeah.
That's like a session from one end.
Yeah, so Jeff Lawson, special circumstances, 16. Jeff Lawson was lying in hospital with a broken jaw, so we were a bowler down. Tony Donomay, Tim May, Steve Waugh were the other bowlers, and we just bowled from one end at the Wacker.
Yep.
So it wasn't too bad, and the cover's just coming off here. But,
how'd you
16
pull up?
Overs.
How'd you pull up?
I reckon I pulled up okay, but probably in hindsight struggled because the next couple of test matches, the Melbourne test match and Sydney test match, didn't take a wicket and wasn't at my best. Mm. So probably without knowing it, you're a little bit fatigued. I suppose the man to ask about that would be P. Diddy, Peter Siddle, with the efforts he put in. I think it was against South Africa at the Adelaide Oval, and I'm pretty sure he got rested the next test match. He was a little bit disappointed. He felt okay, but if we had a bowl first, Sid would have been in trouble that game. But I have a look back at it and just think, well, it was a big workload. At the end of the test match, felt fine, but the next two test matches, it was against the West Indies. There could be a case put forward, Mick, that I wasn't going to take a wicket anyway.
No, I'm not believing that for a minute. That's extraordinary stuff. I would have loved to have seen you after your 16 over spell, mate. That would have been the time to take you on. I would have come out and faced you after 16 overs.
Well, very important to prepare for the next day too, Mick.
That's right.
So got off the ground, and as any professional sportsman did, put ice on, so I was struggling a little bit, left knee, right knee, calf was playing up a little bit, left ankle was a bit sore, groin was a bit sore, so I had ice packs on, and very important while you do that, you've got something to do, so I had about 3 stubbies in 20 minutes.
And you kept them iced up as well.
Yeah, so
you kept your knees together with your tinny between.
Very good old days. Ice up from the inside, mate.
Killing two birds with one stone, you are there, Merv.
The good old days. Good news,
yes.
Mick Malloy. The covers have been removed from the magnificent MCG. They're just getting the stumps, etc. ready. It looks like the rain shower has cleared away with Pakistan 4 for 192. I think we can go into the outer with Julian Schiller. He is down there with Lawrence Mooney as well. Gentlemen, come in.
Yes, g'day Howie. We're here with the Richies, who are going to day two of every test. Howie, I know you've done a big push at the Big Bash to have the Howies guys in thongs and board shorts with a bit of product in the air. You can visit howie.com for all your Howie needs. And Loz, we're here with the Richies, and it's a great tradition, isn't it, in Test cricket?
Absolutely. It's been over a year now since we lost the great man. And Michael, you are the convener of the Richies. Tell us your plans for the summer.
Oh, it's been great this summer going around to all the tests for day two, Richie Day at each test. And next year we really want at least 190 Richies for day two at each test to honour Richie, with 190 being his test number. So that'd be great.
And so you started all this and all these guys are here. So you don't know all of these guys. It's just they roll up and all dressed as Richie and they're welcome.
Yeah, absolutely. So we do a package where they get the wig and the mic, the song sheets with all our songs and the Channel 9 stickers and all that sort of jazz. We do a bit of a pre-match function and we provide the trumpet players and the works for Richie Day, yes.
And the collective noun for the Richies?
Oh, it's definitely a marvel of Richies today. Yeah, there's only 40 here at the MCG today, but we're hoping to build the tradition for Melbourne. And we've had some great turnouts across the country so far.
All right, guys, now to play us out, well, I know the covers are coming off, match is about to start. You've got trumpeters here who lead you in all the songs. So, guys, let's go to one of the famous cricketers' anthems. Here we go. The Richies are kicking off here, guys. Back to you in the commentary box.
Thank you.
I still prefer that to wake me up before you go, I've got to say. That'd be a good alarm in the morning, wouldn't it? If your alarm went off, you had to bounce out of bed. Morning!
It's just good times. You hear that music and you know it's good times, isn't it? Good news here that the play will resume in the next 5 minutes with Pakistan 4 for 192. Nazar Ali on 96. Asad not out on 24. Still 76 overs remaining today. Mark Howard with you. Triple M rocking Test cricket. Merv Hughes and Mick Malloy.
I heard they're having a go at you at your fashion sense, but Lawrence Mooney should not be on the front foot. Have you seen what he's wearing on his feet today? Now, this is 2 days in a row. Yesterday, he was nearly forcibly removed from a bar here at the members for wearing red slippers. He looked like Judy Garland out of The Wizard of Oz. And today, he's wearing a shoe, like a tailored shoe with blue laces and no socks. Now, I'm no doyen of the fashion industry, Merv, as I,
really?
I'm sure you.
Sorry. But can you repeat what you just said? You are no
what? I'm no doyen of the fashion industry.
Blue jeans and check shirts.
Hello.
Mate, I go to a 70s night, I wear that. I just wear it all the time. Never goes out of fashion.
No, it doesn't. I'm good to go, whatever it is. So for him to be on the front, for him to be having a go at you, Mark Howard, I find a little unpalatable.
Well, thank you, Mick. He's got a brown brogue on with no sock.
With no sock. And I'm pretty sure they're blue laces. Can we get a picture of that and put it on the website, please?
We'll whack it on at Triple M Sport. There's one of his attire yesterday. And to be honest, if I had legs like him, I'd be wearing the long pants as well. But back here.
I'll tell you, and as Mick shouldn't be talking about fashion, you should not be talking about other people's builds.
Okay, no, it's a fair point.
See, we always turn on
each
other in a rainbow.
Thank you, to the right of me.
Oh, mate, we could start a show. We could do Twins, the Australian version.
We could. You and me, divide us by two, would be the perfect weight move. We would.
We're coming back out here after a rain delay. Now, I know this sounds silly, but do you see the Herald Sun about a month ago? They actually said we may try and put a roof on the MCG. And I laughed. I said, how do you do it? And they actually had plans in the paper and how the retractable roof would work. I can't see it myself. That's a big job, isn't it?
So I don't think anywhere else in the world they've got a retractable roof on a sports stadium, has it?
Well, especially one of this size. It'd have to be a giant teepee or something.
Oh, hang on, Etihad Stadium. Oh, that's right.
Yeah, but not as big as this, mate. Have a look at that. What kind of construction site would that be?
That'd be huge, wouldn't it?
That'd be 10 years.
You would have been playing here, Merv, in the early days when they were building the great Southern Stand.
Yeah, well, came in and, you know, all the stands down. That was the new centrepiece, wasn't it? I reckon maybe late 80s, early 90s. I remember the Victorian boys walking onto the ground from the members end, looking at this state, looking at this big grandstand, and just thinking, gee, how big is this? And Damien Fleming, in his dry, cynical and sarcastic way, said, oh, imagine that full of the Sheffield Shield now.
The umpires have decided to take an early lunch break. Pakistan 4 for 232. Mark Howard with you. And at this stage of the tests, we've been having a chat to some of our superstar commentators and just finding out a little bit behind some of these men and women. And today, well, what about this man? A great Victorian who hailed out of Latrobe Valley and has just blown this game of cricket apart. Peter Siddle. Hello, Sids.
Hello, Howie. A couple of greats out of Latrobe Valley.
Well, yes, I was sort of from Traralgon and you were born in Traralgon and then moved to Morwell. And from all reports, let's get straight into it, you're a woodchopper. True or not?
Yes, I was in the younger years. That the old family tradition. Grandfather and father and uncles and all that type of thing. The local shows, the wood chopping events that you usually see over in the back corner. Yeah, I took part in a few of those in the younger years, but being an avid sportsman in those early years, that I decided if I wanted to keep continuing playing those, I probably should give up the axe before I lose a big toe.
Did you rock the Dunlop volleys in the day?
Yeah, little Dunlop volleys and the cricket pant. Yeah. So I had the cricket pant on early, and then but usually had the singlet on.
Yeah.
Had the singlet on top. So yeah, but I thought if I want to keep this big toe and my balance and coordination, I probably should give it up and. In the end, it worked out for the best.
So when did cricket start taking over your life? When did you start to think, righto, I'm not going to be a rocket scientist, I'm not going to be a wood chopper, I'm going to be a cricketer?
Well, not be a rocket scientist. I knew that early on.
How'd you go at school up there? Where were you, in Morwell somewhere?
Yeah, in Morwell, yeah, Kurnai College.
Right.
I wasn't too bad. The first probably, up until year 10, I reckon I was pretty good. But then that's probably when cricket did. Yeah, it probably works out when cricket sort of kicked off and started taking shape. And, yeah, I started when I was 12. By the time I got to 15, I was playing some good competitive cricket down here in Melbourne, the junior stuff. And I decided, it was 16 when I'd finished junior cricket down home in the country. And I had the choice whether I could go and start playing at Dandenong Cricket Club in the Premier Cricket in Melbourne, or stay back home and play another year of senior cricket and just, you know, get my bearings and get everything back there. But I've always been up for a challenge and hard work, and I made the big leap to come down to Melbourne and join Dandenong at 16 and started playing grade cricket from there.
And progressed very well. You made your way through the grade teams into the first there at Dandenong, ended up playing for Victoria. Your first test match for Australia Wonderful if you can make your test match debut in your own country. I think you were over in India, were you, for your test
India.
Match debut? Well, yeah. How do you find out that you're going to be playing your first test match, and what was it like?
Yeah, it was probably still to this day the best achievement out of everything. I think, it was the dream growing up to represent Australia in the baggy green. Like, I loved the history behind it and everything. And, I was lucky enough on that tour. I thought I was just going as a, project player. They just take you along. You learn the ropes. You're around these superstars, blokes you looked up to, and you might help out a bit along the way. But, the second test, Stuart Clark had a little bit of an elbow injury and was struggling going into that test match. So had a little test the day before the match to see if he could get through. So I tagged along. I wasn't really meant to be involved that day with training or anything, but I tagged along and just sort of hung around, just having a look over my shoulder just to see how he's going.
Don't forget me, Ricky.
And see what's going on. And I watched him pull up after a couple of balls, and I started to get a bit nervous, not knowing if it was going to be me or not, but it was only going to be myself or Dougie Bollinger. And, I got Ricky came over, tapped me on the shoulder, and you better be ready to go tomorrow. So, no worries, Captain. Yep, I'll be good, mate. And I don't think I slept before I played that first day.
Nervous delivering that first ball in Test cricket. You're up against Indians,
nervous.
I presume Tendulkar's playing at this stage.
In Mahali. So Brett Lee opened the bowling from the other end, another hero of mine that I idolised. I got to open the bowling with him, so I got the second over there in Mahali. And Gautam Gambhir is on strike at the other end. He's had a great career up till that date. He's been a great player for India. And I'm just like, just run in, bowl fast. And I just didn't want to bowl a wide. I wanted to get down there and at least get him getting on target. And I charged in and banged it in, short pitched, and happened to hit him in the head. So it wasn't a bad way to start your test career as a fast bowler.
We're having a chat to Peter Siddle, just reminiscing and looking ahead with his test career. Pakistan are 4 for 232. Azhar is 112. Asad is not out 48. Pakistan have added 90 today without losing any wickets. Slightly early lunch break with a little bit of rain around. We had one delay for about 15 minutes. And it's still just drizzling, for want of a better term, here at the MCG. How tough is test cricket, Sids? We talk about the bowlers now, and Mitch Stark looks a little bit flat coming into this test match. And what do you draw upon when you're into your 35th over and you're in India and it's 40 degrees and you're getting smacked everywhere? How do you push on?
Oh, I think it's pretty easy. It's about winning. I think that's what drives you all the time. Firstly, it's obviously representing your country. You want to get there and be a part of it, but it's all about winning. You just want to, so doing something for the team. And I think even though it is a team sport, at different moments, it's very individualised. If you've got the ball in the hand, it does come down to a lot to you. If you're out there in the middle, it comes down to the two blokes out there. So that's what I try and do. I just want to, what can I do for the team when I've got the ball in hand? And that's what drives me. That's the challenge, the hard work in it all. I've always been a big traditionalist, love test cricket because of how hard it is, the tactics that go into it, everything that's involved in a test match. And I think that's what it is as a bowler. You just got to try and work over the batsman, do what you can, and work with conditions as best as you can. And it's so pleasing, though, when you do get that result, when you get that wicket, the breakthrough. You get the bag in a spell, those kind of things. That's what puts a smile on your face, and that's what you love as a team.
I can see you smiling about it now. And I do a little podcast, Sids, that you've been involved in called the Howie Games, and your episode is out this Thursday. Brad Hodge at the moment, a lot of cricketers, all sorts of sports people in there, so check out the Howie Games. But a thing we did discuss in it, we won't have the time to deal with it in as much depth now, is for some reason your diet has become a big talking point in Australian cricket, in Australian sport. You become a vegan, and when things weren't going well for you and you weren't bowling at your best, all of a sudden the fast bowlers are out there saying, well, how can he not bowl fast without eating meat? Which I found extraordinary, and I know you probably took to heart a little bit and probably got a little bit frustrated. And just describe your approach to your diet and how it makes you feel as opposed to what you used to eat and how you used to operate then.
Yeah, it's obviously, it is a big change. You go away from, pretty much it's vegan, if no one knows, you give up all animal products, anything to do with, animals. You don't consume. So it was a big change.
Were you a sort of steak and vegetable man?
Yeah, a little bit. I ate a lot of seafood. I varied. I didn't cook a lot at home, so I can honestly say I never cooked a steak. So everyone goes, oh, you must need a steak. It's like, I never cooked one at home in my whole life. It'd never been a big part of my lifestyle, but I ate out a lot. And I think it was just, I needed some changes. I was going through, I had a lot of injuries different stages throughout my career. I met a new partner who was obviously vegetarian, vegan. But yeah, I had there's loads of issues. I had health issues with my family. I lost an auntie and uncle to bowel cancer. So there's loads of different things that, you know, play a part in why I made this choice. But yeah, it is the big talking point when when something goes wrong. It's because he's vegan.
Not when it's going right. Only when it's going wrong.
Correct. It's only when it's going wrong. If it's going right, nothing gets said. But I think the big thing for me, which proved everyone wrong, was the fact of the injury. Yes, I'm injured at the moment, and everyone gets injured. But before that, it had been 4 years since I'd been injured. I'd played cricket for 4 years as a fast bowler, which pretty much no fast bowler does. So that's the thing that I like to say. But no one brings up and goes, oh, maybe the change in your lifestyle and stuff brought upon those results.
You're a completely different looking person. If I have a look at you even 5 or 6 years ago, you're a lot chubbier in the face then. You might have dyed your hair and you're rocking some beads as well, but that's a whole other topic, Sid. But you look like a real athlete now, a real athlete, and obviously that's heavily linked to the changes you made in your diet.
Yeah, massively. The changes in the diet helped, and I think just before I made those changes, I reckon it was my experience that I had when the previous back injury I had back when I was 25, that I spent a lot of time at the Carlton Football Club through Justin Cordy, who used to work with Cricket Australia, and he, you know, he took me under his wing to look after me in that downtime. It was good to get away from cricket and work with different athletes. And you're walking around, you know, with AFL players, finely tuned, you know, very fit looking men. And yeah, I disgraced in myself in a way that I'm a professional athlete representing my country, and look at these guys. And I think that's where it opened my eyes a lot more to how the game was turning to be a lot more professional, but how as cricketers we are perceived. And yeah, you're looking at those guys, so that sort of opened my eyes a lot. And I think made me think a lot more about my health, my fitness, and how I should be presenting myself as a professional athlete. And I think, yeah, that was sort of the turning point a little bit with the way I trained. And then, yeah, obviously the lifestyle changes came not long after that. But yeah, as a feel, as a person, yeah, I feel unbelievable. That's the thing. I've got loads of energy, feel healthy, a lot lighter, a lot more mobile. And I think I'm going to benefit that in the long term. I think that's going to give me a lot longer longevity in the game. Which is what you want to do. I love this game. I love playing cricket. Love representing my country, my state. And that's what it's all about. And yeah, to be able to play that for as long as I can, especially as a fast bowler, it's about, you know, working on things and making changes where need be to stay that long in the game. And I think, yeah, I think I've definitely made the right choice. And it's a lifestyle that I love.
Good for you, Sid. We're chatting to Peter Siddle, Mark Howard with you. Triple M rocking Test cricket. An early lunch break with a bit of rain around. Pakistan are 4 for 232. Azhar Ali with his 12th Test ton. He's going beautifully. Started off the innings 233 balls ago. That's how many he's faced. Asad is on 48. Pakistan 4 for 232. Obviously, when you're out injured, there's the young, shiny things. There's the bowlers out there at the moment. They're talking about Pattinson. They're talking about Cummins. I'm not hearing the name Siddle a great deal. How are you feeling about that?
That's pretty common throughout my whole career.
It is.
Yeah, I think.
How do you deal with that?
I'm always a positive person. I think my record speaks for itself. This is how I look at it. My record speaks for itself. And, you know, when I'm fully fit, I know what I can do for my country and my state. So it's just a matter of getting fit. I've always been like that. That, you know, being the third seamer predominantly all my career, I very rarely got the new ball. That if a new player comes into the side, you're the one that's always talked up, that's on the outer. And
do you read the papers when that comes up?
Yeah, I've always been.
Does that motivate you?
Yeah.
Does it annoy you?
It always annoys you, but I've been able to control that into an aggression I want to show people. I want to show them what I can do, you know. I want to prove them wrong. And I think that's why I've always read the news. I've watched the news, read the papers, all that kind of thing. I've never wanted to be hide from it because, yeah, I've always been, you know, I just love winning, and that's just another challenge in itself. That, yeah, I want to prove this person wrong, and not to get back at them in any way in a press conference after I do well, but just to be able to walk into a press conference once, you know, you've been shot down, and then you walk back in there, and you just got a smile on your face, and they know when he's proved us wrong, no worries. But yeah, that's what I like about it, and I just love challenges. And that's where I'm at the moment. It's another challenge. Yes, I just turned 32, but like I said, my body, the shape I'm in, how I feel and how I'm going, I think that shows that, you know, I've got plenty of years left in me. And hopefully that continues very soon.
One batsman in the world that you don't want to bowl to, who is it?
Oh, you put me on the spot. There's a few out there.
Just give me one, Sid.
I'll go with Kane Williamson.
Kane Williamson?
Yep.
Okay, the Kiwi?
Yeah.
Why?
I just like the way he goes about it. Yeah, I think when you look at other players, other opposition, he's a tough competitor, very skillful, especially in a I'm talking test matches here. That's who I'm.
Yep.
I'm gonna have some great battles with. That's what I love. But he's one that, you know, it's gonna be a good battle.
And if you desperately want a wicket, who's the one bowler you throw the ball to?
Brett Lee.
He'd be happy to hear that.
Yeah. No, I idolised him when I was growing up, and to be able to play. Probably, I don't even know the exact amount of tests, but be able to play a few test matches with him. Yeah, that's some of the greatest times my years, you know, and have him around the side while I was sort of starting off. The advice he gave me, but yeah, I loved watching him bowl. Loved it. So I think, yeah, he'd be the man that I'd love to throw the ball to.
If you want to hear more from Peter Siddle, check out the Howie Games. It's on iTunes. It comes out Thursday, and Sid goes into all that and more. You're a star. I reckon you're on your way to 400-plus test wickets, and we'll be cheering on all the way. But hopefully we can get you in commentary a little bit along the way because you're doing a ripper job, Sid.
Cheers, Howie. Thank you.
Nerolee Meadows is beside me. There's a lot happening in the world of cricket. Firstly, all our thoughts are with Mark Nicholas. Does a wonderful job on the Nine Network. He hosts there, and he does some wonderful calling. Left the ground yesterday with a bit of a medical issue. Apparently good news coming through there.
Yeah, good news. He's out of hospital and back at his hotel. He won't be back in the commentary box today, but he's certainly hopeful that he will be back in the commentary box before the end of this test, which is great news because it was pretty scary stuff here. I know you weren't here, but it was pretty scary stuff. He was taken away to hospital and in an awful lot of pain in a pretty bad way. So it is great news that he is okay and it's nothing too serious.
Yeah, well, hopefully we see Mark back at the cricket soon. He's a much-loved member of the cricket fraternity. End of the game itself, narrowly. Big Bash, a lot of news happening there.
Certainly is. Last night you were there, obviously. Yep. Stars pulled off a big win down in Hobart against the Hurricanes. They made 191 for a 7-wicket win. Bobby Quiney, a man that we haven't seen a lot of, but one of everybody's favourites, made 75 of 43 balls, 5 sixes, 5 fours. He combined very well with Luke Wright to start with, and then Glenn Maxwell, who made 58 off 29 balls. So a really big effort for Bobby Quiney. The issue here becomes Kevin Peterson, the great man, the big import, is on his way as we speak over to Australia. He missed the opener because he spends Christmas with his family. Whether you agree with that or not, I'm not sure I'm a big fan of it, to be honest. He does it every year. I think once off, maybe you can get away with it, but doing it every year is, I don't know, it's a little bit cheeky, I reckon. He's on his way, so who misses out now for Kevin Peterson to make his way in, because Bobby Quiney has been the man who misses out.
Yeah, it's a really difficult one, and he batted absolutely fantastically last night. I think he had 3 knocks last year in the Big Bash, only scored 21 runs, but he came out last night chasing down 189 for the win just with intent, tying the ball perfectly. Nice position for the Stars to be in, though. They obviously lose players like Maxwell, like Faulkner. They've already lost Hanscom when the one day has come around. So to have Bobby there, it really firms up for the Melbourne Stars. They were really, really good last night, and I'm sure you heard it. Glenn Maxwell with the mic on. I think a lot of Australia got to see the real side of Glenn Maxwell. He was out in the middle. He was warm. He was engaging. He was entertaining. And narrowly, he was team-oriented.
He was, and he is. And he is a wonderful guy, Maxie. I consider him a good mate. And it was a great moment last night where he was commentating and he took the catch.
It was, yeah.
He almost mucked it up, but he took it, and he's a world-class fielder, as we know. So it was great to hear Maxie on the mic and people getting an insight to that, because it was, as we say, a huge fight back, because Hobart were in fine form. George Bailey made 74 not out, and Tim Payne, he was just back to his best last night. It was wonderful. Made 91 off 61 balls.
Why is he not in the discussion of Australian wicketkeepers?
He was until, you know, our mate down the road, Dirk Nannis, broke his finger when he was the next in line after Brad Haddin, and it took him so long to come back. And he just he hasn't had the greatest first-class average with the bat since then. He's had times where he's in and out, but it would be a bit of a fairy tale, wouldn't it? But now he's on the wrong side of 30, and that was my favourite thing about last night. The bloke's on the wrong side of 30 doing very well, and this test side is obviously going for youth. So at this point, it's either Peter Neville or Matthew Wade. But Tim Payne was certainly in the conversation for a few years there.
Yeah, the T20s in February, I think there's three or four T20s. I wouldn't be surprised if Payne continues to make runs. He's made 250s now if he doesn't bob up in that T20 squad. Tonight, Nerilee, we've got another game of Big Bash. Who's on tonight?
We've got the Scorchers up against the Sixers tonight at the SCG. The return of Sean Marsh. We haven't seen him in action since he played at the Wacker Test. Broke his finger, has had surgery, and it's been a bit of a delayed comeback for him. He was floated in the possible picture for this Boxing Day test but couldn't get back in time. And funnily enough, we had Brad Hogg on, who, of course, is the former Scorchers player, now the Renegades. The next Renegades game is up against the Scorchers. And he's doing what Hoggy does best, and that is stir the pot nicely. He's come up with a conspiracy theory that Sean Marsh was actually fit and ready to play in the Scorchers opener.
Right.
But Cricket Australia didn't want him to because they didn't want to have to make a decision between he and Nick Maddison. So that is Hoggy at his best. Conspiracy theories. He loves to just get stuck into people, doesn't he? And that's his way, I think, of getting stuck into his old side, starting the mind games before they play against each other for the first time.
And he started well, Brad Hogg, as well, with a couple. We get any more news bubbling around, narrowly?
Well, it's, of course, we've got another test match, the other Boxing Day test match, South Africa up against Sri Lanka. South Africa won the toss at Port Elizabeth and have made 6 for 267 stumps on day one. They were none for 104, but Saranga Lakmal was sensational, 4 for 62. So wonderful figures there to really stop the momentum of the home side. JP Duminy has the highest score at the moment, 63. Quinton de Kock is not out on 25, and Vernon Philander is not out on 6. And speaking of bowlers doing well, how about Hilfy last night on a hat trick and the hat trick ball?
Well, I think
that was just wonderful.
He knocked two blokes over, including Don Michael, who I think came to the crease after playing 4 Big Bash innings for 4 ducks. And there's no way you can avoid that statistic, so it has to come into the equation. And I said to Ricky Ponting, he's had a lean spell, and then he got knocked over 4th ball, at which Ricky said, well, it's even leaner now. And then Hilfy was on a hat-trick and bowled what we declared the worst hat-trick ball in the history of cricket, a full toss, no ball, pitched on leg stump that was lucky to not end up in the Derwent, and they got a free hit as a result.
Poor old Hilfy, up against his own team
He was. Now, talking about cricket, we've got to get Isha Gura into this conversation because I had a chat, Ish, with Stuart Broad down at the Hurricanes yesterday, and we just had a bit of a chat for an interview on Channel 10, and we started to turn our attention to the Ashes. It's a year out, and I've already seen the English are starting to push directions on their squad. First test here next year, will Alistair Cook be in charge of England, yes or no?
Difficult one to
answer.
That's
why
you're
our English expert in all these areas and not one to sit on the fence.
Well,
I wouldn't have thought.
Yes, okay. Now was the time, you would think, if they were going to make a change, for Joe Root to come in and take hold of England going forwards. Obviously, still having Alistair Cook in the side, in the leadership group. But he's already stated, I saw the interview post-match in India in the last test match, and he spoke about the fact that he was going to go home for Christmas, spend some time at home and just gather his thoughts and figure out exactly what the right decision should be without all the emotion of what had gone on in India. But, you know, he's had a pretty good tenure with England, Alistair Cook, and just the results that haven't really been that great for him over the last year or so. So, it might be time now for a change. Surely that's the type of job that once you start thinking about not doing that job, you shouldn't be doing it
anymore. Couldn't agree more, narrowly.
And that's fine. We've had previous captains here, Steve Waugh, Ricky Ponting, around when the next one takes over. So it's not trying to kick him out the door or anything. But once you've started to mentally check out, surely you're done. And particularly before an Ashes series.
I think cricket is I haven't played any other sport, but cricket is just one of those where you're on the treadmill and, you know, he's got a lot to think about constantly. And when results aren't going your way, that's when you do question yourself and you think, am I the right person to do the job? Alistair Cook has traditionally been a very stubborn man. And when he has been questioned before, he's come out and said, look, I will do the job as long as the selectors want me to do the job. And he has been forthright in his opinions of wanting to lead England. And he will still be, he'll still want to do the job if they ask him to. I think he's he's a great person to have around the team in terms of trying to develop the youngsters coming through. Hasib Hamid, obviously, and then Jet Jennings coming in and opening alongside him. He would have been great for advice at the other end. And he should still be involved in some capacity. But I just think that a bit of time away will just give him that kind of, I guess, an understanding of what should happen going forwards in his mind. And I don't think it should be a rash, irrational decision for him to say, right, it hasn't gone well this series, I'm going to step down.
Triple M will be covering the full Ashes series next year, and as well as looking forward to the cricket, I'm looking forward to walking home each night with you, Ishiguro, and just laughing at you as the English are getting wiped off very Australia's
I
cricket
grounds.
I cannot
wait, Howie.
We're looking forward to that. We're in the middle of an extended lunch break. We had to go to it a little bit early with the inclement weather around the MCG. The light covers are on at the moment. They've removed the heavy covers. The MCG lights are on. The score in the game, Pakistan 4 for 232. Chewman's got the cards there behind us. When you get those all organised, Chew, you might run through the full card, batting and bowling style, as we just hope that we get an update shortly as to what's happening. Nerilee Meadows is headed down to the ground, so she'll bring us up to date exactly when we're expecting a resumption. Chew, the full cards, please.
Yeah, so Pakistan, as you said, Howie, 4 for 232. The batsmen out to date, Sami Aslam went out for 9, Court Smith bowled line. Then we had Baba Azam out for 23, Court Smith bowled Hazelwood. Yunus Khan went out cheaply for 21, bowled by Jackson Bird. And then Misbah Al-Haq also went out for a very low score. Once again, he only made 11, Court Madison bowled Bird. But the not-out batsman, Azhar Ali, he's on 112. Of course, he posted his 12th career century. And Asad Shafiq continues his good form. He's on 48 not out. And just looking at the bowling figures, Howie. Mitchell Stark, first test at the MCG. 16 overs, no wicket for 41. Hazelwood, economical as per usual. 19 overs, 1 for 23. Economy rate at 1.21. Jackson Bird, 23 overs, 2 for 65. Nathan Lyon, 17 overs, 1 maiden, 1 for 69. And the part-timer, Steve Smith, tweaked the arm as well. 3 overs, no wicket for 9. And Madison, 3 overs, no wicket for 18.
Well done, Chewy. Mark Howard with you, Julian Schiller and Isha Gua. Isha's the rain. It's just sort of... What do you call it in the UK? Mizzle, I think you call this. A bit of drizzle and a bit of
every
mist.
Every day, isn't it?
That's
pretty
it.
Much.
It's a typical day.
Yeah, it's just one of those annoying ones, isn't it? You either want it to just absolutely hammer down or just stop altogether. And I've been here at the MCG before in, I think it was 2011, we were here, and that's exactly what it did. It absolutely hammered down, and I thought, okay, that's us done for today. And then within about 15 minutes of it stopping raining, a bit of sun on the grass, and the coach came into the nets and was like, yep, we're playing, get ready, set 15 minutes you've got to warm
delay,
up.
Was the delay before or after you got hit for one of the biggest sixes ever seen in the Southern Hemisphere?
Which I've just been reminded of. Again, thanks for that, Channel 9.
The host broadcaster just showing Isha getting pummeled. Obviously wasn't the game. You got 9 for in at Ashes test. Isha, a more serious topic. Obviously the Big Bash is doing good things in this part of the world, and the ECB are sending out a contingent of people to have a look at that over the summer. When are we expecting a T20 comp of this style in the United Kingdom? Next summer? The summer after?
Well,
I know there's been a lot of resistance from the counties.
Yeah, it can't be until 2020, I believe,
right.
It is, because up until that point is the Friday night cricket that's been going on in England. And yes, there has been a lot of resistance for the counties. They're worried that the grounds, so for example, Surrey, always fill up on a Friday night. Chelmsford does pretty well. Somerset, the Lancashire, Yorkshire derbies are always a good event to go to and are pretty packed and lots of viewership. But the problem we're getting at the moment is the fact that you can't retain overseas players across the whole summer. So the most wise step going forwards would be to condense the tournament and make it over 4 or 5 weeks, so you can have that block where you get the overseas players. For an example is Chris Gayle playing for Somerset, but the TV games had already been decided
right
before that deal happened. So he was smashing 100 off 25 deliveries, and that wasn't available on television. So that's something that needs to be considered. Whether it will be a case of going to franchise cricket or whether they will retain the counties and maybe just have a league system whereby the top division, all of the games are on television. But then you've got the problem of someone like a Northants, how do you determine who should go in that division? A Northants who wouldn't necessarily be able to afford your best overseas players, but they actually do pretty well in the T20 tournament. You know, they'd want to be in that division. So there's lots of things to consider, and also TV rights.
It seems almost an unstoppable force at the moment, but the game does go in cycles, Jules. We'll get your thoughts on all this in a moment, but I think we can go down to the boundary of the MCG with our finest news hound sniffing out what's going on down there, Neroli Meadows. Nez.
Sadly, I'm standing under an umbrella at the moment, Nez. Howie. That's a sad life. You
Toughen
may just
up.
Be radio today, but I'm television as well. The bosses may not be too happy with me if I look like a drowned rat at the end of the day, but no, the rain is it's very light, but it's still coming down. The umpires won't come out for another 10 minutes as I almost get tripped up by a television cable there. So 1:15, they will inspect the pitch and the ground and the conditions and see how we're tracking. But at the moment, it's very, very light rain. I've just walked past the Pakistanis enjoying a fair bit of lunch, so they're certainly in no hurry to get back out here. Mickey Arthur just getting stuck into an ice cream. So good to see that they're enjoying the lunch break at least. But 1:15 is when we will have another update. And the lights are on at the MCG. The rain is definitely easing. I've had a look at the radar. There's a fair bit more on the way, but hopefully we do get a bit of play underway before that hits.
All right, Nez, your job is to get that ice cream out of his hand and stick a microphone in there. We'd like to have a chat with Mickey Arthur at some stage. Can you sort that out for us?
I'll do my best.
All right, Neroli Meadows, very well connected. All right, Jules. Now, when Triple M set this stuff up, they thought, right, we're going to go with a bit of a cricket commentary and then we're going to throw a comedian. And for
I'm not really. That's putting them.
Listen, for mine, the comedian was here to provide some light entertainment throughout the cricket. But if it rained, it was when the comedians would come into their own. Well, it's currently raining.
The comedians went straight to the bar yesterday.
Well, what I'm trying to say to you, Jules, is if you've got some crisp, funny stuff up your sleeve, now would be a good time to start rolling it out.
Well, I just purely came in here, Howie, to get another Paul McCartney story out of Isha, because if you're listening to our Brisbane broadcast, she dropped his name frequently. We had Gus in yesterday talking about his Christmas with Hugh Jackman, so there's been a lot of name droppage during this test cricket.
I've
only got a
story
about Toadfish, so I'm pretty outclassed here. But Isha's boasted that she's met Paul McCartney on several occasions because they share the same gym. Is that right at Lord's?
That is, in the past when I went to the gym at Lord's.
Well, typically Isha's stories are perfectly suited to rain delays because they can stretch into the 3 or 4 hour territory. Are you tight with Paul McCartney? Do you have his number in your phone?
I don't, no.
Right.
No,
does he know you by name?
Yeah, he does.
Does he really?
And do you call him Sir or just Paul or Macca or what do you roll with?
Yeah, Macca.
Macca. No. You do not. You do not call Paul McCartney Macca. We're wielding the captain of the commentary team, Kerry O'Keefe, and deserves a round of applause. Because I tell you what, there's not many 109-year-olds that can run a sharp operation like you, Kerry, but you are and you're looking fantastic, boss.
Thank you, mate. I'm getting a whisper that there is a mutiny, though, but I'll enjoy my last day.
Thank you
for that.
It's been a fine captaincy, Mr. Bly. We'll just go down briefly down to the ground to Neroli Meadows. Nez, an update, please.
Draining, and I put the umbrella down, but it's just started spitting again. So that isn't good news, because if it had stopped when they did the assessment in 1 minute's time, it could have been good news. But it's getting harder as we speak, and the umbrella is about to go back up again. So we'll have a bit more information in a couple of minutes, but it's not looking ideal.
Thanks, Nez. We were just having a bit of a joke with you, Kerry, but you're in magnificent shape. You're fired. You've come. You've rolled up to the cricket today, ready to produce some of your finest. And unfortunately, the game that you know and love so well, we've got a touch of a delay at the moment. Oh,
come on, Melbourne. Lift your game. The big bash is all over us, as you know, Howie. We need a big Boxing Day blockbuster. It was set up yesterday at tea time. Australia may have stormed home late in the day to win. Suddenly Pakistan have reversed the momentum. 90 in the first session, looking good. Two world-class players at the crease, Azhar Ali, Asad Shafiq. And then the rain comes again. So disappointing from a match point of view. But, you know, there was theatre building and suddenly the rain has put an end to it briefly. But we may get some before the end of the day.
Pakistan obviously in a strong position now. As I said, they've added 90 without loss. They've got the leg spinner, Kerry.
Yes.
Who's been the second quickest ever to 100 test wickets. He's got an incredible record. If we get here on day 4 and day 5, do you fear for the Australians?
Cool, the Tash.
Really?
Yasir Shah.
Yeah.
Last Shield game here, 35 wickets fell, 16 were LBW or bowled. I said earlier, over 50% of wickets that Yasir Shah takes in Test cricket are LBW or bowled. There's an obvious trend that the ball stays down and hurries on late. If they get 400 and Yasir Shah's bowling behind that, Pakistan can win this game on his back. It didn't suit him in Brisbane. The bounce was too consistent. There was no purchase for him. The Australian players just played back to virtually every delivery, knowing that he didn't have enough to hurt them. They can't play back on the MCG on day four and day five.
Kerry, can I ask, because I love hearing insights and tales from your time as a Test cricketer. You weren't getting paid a lot. Niche could probably answer this as well, because women's cricketers, sadly, don't get paid a lot either. How miserly did you have to be, or did county players have to be in your day just to make ends meet?
Just similar work to Triple M, I would have thought.
Yeah. I interviewed a guy recently who'd buy 2-ply toilet paper and spend 40 minutes separating the plies so he could get double the money out of it.
Well, it's the first time in my life with Triple M that I turned left on an aeroplane.
You were up in business.
Hey, how did you manage that?
Yeah, the rest of us are going right, Kerry.
Check out your agent. So turning left and watching the plebs walk past me.
You should get on last, Skull. That's fine.
No way.
I don't mind.
Everyone get on first and wait for you lot to come along.
Everyone in business makes eye contact with you as you walk into a corner, don't they?
Shocking.
Just to let you know.
I've never known resentment like it.
And then you try and drop You try and drop the old, oh, no, I just got upgraded. I used my points. Sure you did, Kerry.
This Atlantic salmon's a little off. Somebody in 19F might like it.
Someone passed me the Berkeley Co. Yeah, a bit of champers.
I'll get on to how pecunious we were in my era. Have done it tough.
I was a student for I was a student for 11 years, so it was just good practice for me. I used to, just try and save as much as possible. And now I'm dating a musician, so it just keeps on going.
Who's now in the country, so he can't be quite so critical of his working abilities. Kerry.
I mean, I played for New South Wales 70 times, and for most of that, we were on $8 a day and a $3 dry cleaning allowance. So none of us died.
you couldn't afford to get the grass stains out.
No, the grass stains cost us $3.
How much was a beer when you were on $8 a day?
I don't know, because we just tried to basically meet fans who shouted at us. And then I started coaching at Sydney University and University of New South Wales, and they were students. So I had no money, and I was shouting them. In a shout of four, I'd shout four times. So until the latter part of my life, where I started to turn left on aeroplanes, mostly I fought the battle of being poor.
And when you were playing Test cricket for Australia, what were you getting paid to play Test cricket?
Well, of course, that was the great Kerry Packer.
Yep.
Overview when Dennis Lilley's manager found out that he got $200 for the Test match, and that the crowd through the gate was whatever it was, for 400,000 for paying whatever they were.
Yep.
He did the sums and said, how can the main star get $200 for 5 days' work? So when Kerry Packer failed to get the broadcast rights, even though he was the overbidder, he said, if you pay them anything, they'll come. And we did.
And what was the difference in your wage pre-Kerry and then your first, say, World Series game?
Well, I don't know. I think we were up to... I think we might have been up to $80. It's a while back.
Right.
But I know that the reason it was so attractive, apart from the fact that cricket was going to be marketed to a different audience and the player payments were going to... The fact that we were just dazzled by the amount of money that we were offered. And it was all tiered. I mean, the top players were on the top tier, and I was like a rookie, basically. But the bottom tier was five times more than I would have got for from Cricket Australia. So given I was a part-time bummer on a brewery truck, which is the offsider, who sort of dumps the kegs onto a onto a bag and rolls them into the pub. I thought, you know, rather than play for New South Wales and Australia for not much money and then get not much more as a brewery driver's assistant, I'll take the Kerry Packer money.
Did you meet Kerry? Did you have... I mean, there's so many great Kerry Packer stories. I met his son James when we were in Sochi, Howie.
When I was working on the top of the mountain and you were floating around with the executives, I recall it.
Yeah, because Lachlan Murdoch had a party and there was a Murdoch and a Packer and a Reinhardt there, and I was hobnobbing it with the billionaires. And
I did meet him. We met him during that ill-fated tour of England, the Ashes in 1977. We'd all, three quarters of the team had signed for Kerry Packer, and we were, you know, we knew we were going to be banned from Cricket Australia and the like. And I remember he called us to the hotel he was staying at, I forget which one, and we all went in cabs, and I was sitting next to the late David Hooks. He said, "Oh, I think I'll pull out. I want to play for Australia." Mm. I said, "I'd be careful there, Hooksy." And he said, "No, I've got to, you know, 2-3 years out of my career now. Nah." Anyway, we went up the stairs in the lift to the penthouse, and we all sat, about 12 of us, and suddenly the doors opened, and out this huge puff of smoke filled the room, and Kerry Packer emerged with a lawyer and accountant on either side of him, probably the top in their field in Australia. And he said, "Good afternoon." And and I was sitting next to Hooksy on a leather couch, and he said, "I understand that one or two of you may be having second thoughts about the contract you've signed. If you renege on this contract, your life won't be worth living. I will chase you through the courts. You will not get employment for the rest of your life in Australia. Am I clear?" And I saw Hooksy. He was like a slithering snake.
You see,
is anybody having second thoughts? And I would bolt upright, and there was Hook with his head on my knee. He said, "Okay, now get out of here." He didn't do small talk. You know, it was not, "How's the tour going? Things are looking good for our opening match. Anybody having second thoughts?" And David William was, but he wasn't going to say. And in the lift, he said, "I was a nervous wreck." I noticed Hook.
Pakistan 4 for 232. Kerry O'Keefe, I wouldn't mind if it kept raining so he could continue to entertain us. We'll get an update down on the boundary line. Narrowly, I'm coming to you again. I want some positivity, please.
Every time you come to me, it stopped raining and then it starts spitting again. So I'm blaming you at the moment. Look, the umpires have just come out and they're talking to the groundsmen as we speak. The big covers are still out there, even though it's not actually really raining at the moment at all. So they've got the rope going around the ground at the moment to try and get rid of some of that moisture off of the grass. So they were very kind too. As the umpires walked out, they actually stopped and slowed down so they could just step over the rope. Everyone else just has to dance their way over it. So looking after the officials there, but as I say, they're having a conference at the moment. There's a couple of spitting drops coming from upstairs, but that's about it. So we really do hope the play gets underway shortly. Once they've finished this conference, I'll have another update for you, Howie.
Thanks, Nez, appreciate it. It is without a doubt the world's most beautiful game, Test cricket, but it can be frustrating at times, and that's what we're feeling at the moment. Mark Howard with you, Isha Guha, Julian Schiller and Kerry O'Keefe. And Kerry, Jules brought up a really interesting topic about the money in cricket. And the money you guys used to get paid, you're talking about $8 a day in the Sheffield Shield, and then Kerry Packer came along and things changed for the good for cricketers.
And they did. And if I could just debunk the myth after the Packer era, the man in the street often says, "Oh, you owe, the current players owe everything to Kerry Packer," and they do owe a degree. But once he left the game, and he only had 2 years in it, player payments actually went back to what they were. So those that played in the 80s, which was a very indifferent year early on, particularly mid-80s, were on the same equivalently poor money as those that had gone before. And it wasn't until that groundbreaking 1989 tour of England where they came back, and it was a triumphant tour for Mark Taylor, where they just said, "We're not playing for this money again." And Cricket Australia, I think, maybe in their own minds, fearful of another South African exodus, said, "Okay." And since then, the player payments have gone north to almost to a point where apparently Cricket Australia are now saying, "No, the costs in the game are too, we're going to have a look at what you get." But the myth is that from 1980 onwards, the players just got more and more, but they actually didn't. They went, their payments plateaued more in line with what they were getting in the 70s. So Kerry Packett was great for the game in a number of areas, but in terms of money to the athlete, it didn't change much until 1989-90.
Ish and Scull, is that what's happening with West Indian Test cricket at the moment? Because a lot of the great players aren't playing because there's so much money in T20 that they're deserting the test team?
I think it's partly to do with they're getting more love from places like India than the West Indies Cricket Board, and who knows what's going on politically back home at the moment. There's a bit of conflict and there's not too much communication going on between the West Indies Cricket Board and the Players Association there, so that needs to improve for the players to feel like they're getting looked after. That's essentially what's going on in that part of the world. We are seeing some talented youngsters coming through in the West Indies, and Howie will know, having worked over at the CPL last couple of years.
Yep.
Yeah, that's right. So there's loads and loads of talent coming through. Yes, they are sort of challenging themselves towards going to the IPL and playing in the Big Bash and franchise tournaments around the world because they are getting better supported. And it's a shame because, you know, the West Indies of the 80s and the 90s was just such a sight to behold.
The great problem they've gotten in the Caribbean, I had the pleasure of sitting down with Darren Sammy, who's led them to the last two T20 World Cups over in the Caribbean, Jules, and he was talking about the test wages, and people say, oh, Chris Gayle's given up test cricket and not doing the right thing. Chris Gayle's played over 100 test matches. Mm-hmm. People forget that. But Darren was explaining the situation, as was Darren Ganga, who's heavily involved over there now, who's a wonderful gentleman from the West Indies and has moved into administration, that the board basically came to the players and, as far as test cricket goes, tried to push through about a 65% pay cut. So they were going from whatever they were getting for test match cricket, which was under the odds on an international forum, to say, right, we're going to pay you 65% less. So when you get offered money in India or Bangladesh or Australia, what choice do you have? And these guys have got families and people to look after. And if the opposition radio came to you and Triple M said, we're going to pay you 65% less, and the opposition said to you, we'll pay you more for less, I don't think they've got a choice, Kerry.
You're questioning my loyalty, Howie, are you?
No, I'm not questioning your loyalty. Yeah, right, I'm not questioning anyone else would want you either. But
that's more to the point.
Well, the point being, that I don't think those guys have a choice.
No. Mm. And that's why we see Kyron Pollard in the Big Bash. Andre Russell.
That's right.
And somebody like Carlos Brathwaite, who, I mean, that's an unforgettable image of him hitting those sixes to win the World Cup final.
Carlos Brathwaite, remember
the name. Ian Bishop nailed that commentary.
Oh, did he ever.
But Carlos Brathwaite doesn't feature in Test cricket. With that hitting ability, and you know, does he want to, given that he's going to get a much better living by doing the 2020 leagues around the world? Because after that, he's always in demand, isn't he?
Yep. So
that's the problem. If you're going to pay them 65% less, they're more inclined to say, well, I've got an ability to earn money in another avenue of the game, and I will. And they do.
And I think they deserve every cent. You know, these guys, Jules, a lot of them, Chris Gayle, Darren Sammy, they came from absolutely nothing. Darren Sammy, big family, talks about having to survive at times on mangoes off the tree or mixing flour and water together. He goes and plays in that competition with Alan Stanford, a Texan billionaire who's now actually in jail for all sorts of fraud, and they won $1 million playing against the English. It was 20 million-ish, winner takes all. So you can't offer these guys this and then come back and say, we want you to play test cricket for what is not even your country, because it's a united West Indies, you unite all those countries, and pay you such a small amount of money. I think the genie's out of the bottle, Ish, in some ways.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've talked about it, that the fact that there's just that communication breakdown between the Players Association and the board, and probably needs a bit of Darren Ganga in there up in the administration to try and make something happen back over there and to inspire the youngsters as well.
Are you someone that looks forward, and again talking to a couple of these West Indians, Darren Sammy in particular, fears for where Test cricket will be in the Caribbean in the next 10 years and in World cricket in the next 20 years? Do you fear for Test cricket, Kerry, or is it such a great game that it can ride all this out?
I do fear for Test cricket because the supporters of it are getting older, and the new age followers of cricket are coming through 2020, and the big money is in 2020, and until we equalise that and make playing Test cricket worthwhile for the players, that's going to get more and more pronounced, that gap.
Are you seeing that, Howie, in the Big Bash, players lighting up cigars with $100 bills, showering in coins? Is it just Moe and Bollinger baths?
Well, it's not in the Big Bash, but it is in the IPL. Hmm. You know, we talk about, use Glenn Maxwell for an example. Now, if Glenn Maxwell was under the pressure that, unfortunately, he's been under the last 6 months, 10 years ago, Glenn Maxwell had to go out and perform to get paid. He's probably not using his example, but specifically, but if Glenn Maxwell's not playing Test cricket, he's not getting picked for Victoria, and he's not getting picked in one day international cricket for Australia, he goes to the IPL for 7 weeks and earns each 1 point.
Yeah. It's a lot of money out there. In fact, it was worse.
It's not a bad thing though, Jules, because the athletes deserve that remuneration.
Yeah, I think it's great.
It causes problems for the longer form.
It does have benefits though. Steve Smith, that was where he had his resurgence, playing for Pune, and he was out of the Test team. And he went over there, and that's where I saw him. I saw the side of him that perhaps not a lot of people had seen in Australia. He was ready to fight for every single... I mean, they were getting hammered, Pune. They were bottom of the table, and they just kept getting hammered, and he would always be out there in the middle trying to fight for every run. And the players, it's not just about the money. They enjoy being out there because the stadiums are packed. It is on every billboard, on every TV station, in every paper. People are basically treating them like gods. And they get a lot of love out there. And they want to perform well because they're playing against some pretty good players as well. You know, you got your best players in the world playing in the IPL. And they're learning from each other in the dressing room. They enjoy the camaraderie. Yes, obviously, the money's always going to be a big seller. But I guess it's similar in the Big Bash. You know, players come over here and they really enjoy it because the crowd really get behind them, and they enjoy playing with each other on the big stage.
And the problem really, if we take Glenn Maxwell as the example, is he can earn over $1 million a year in the IPL, a season in the IPL, with a technique that doesn't lend itself to Test cricket. So he stays inside the ball to free his arms to slice over point for six. Shots you wouldn't play in a Test match arena, coming in at six at 4 for 50. So he might say, I still aspire to a baggy green cap. But every week of every year, he's fashioning a technique which is so forged to play inventive, short form shots that it will be difficult for him to reinvent a technique to do it in Test cricket.
I think the one good thing at the moment is that India are performing well, and Virat Kohli has really taken India to new heights in terms of Test cricket, because MS Dhoni is captain. Perhaps they slipped a little bit. Virat Kohli as captain now, he wants the boys to do well, and you're seeing that in their performances. That the youngsters coming in, they want to score big runs, and that's very much filtered down from the biggest superstar that is in India. Everyone follows him, not just in India, all around the world, and they're all keen to see what one of the best players in the world is doing, and I think that is good for Test cricket. The fact that they're trying new things, the ICC are trying new things with the day-night test, trying to encourage people to come in after work, and I think it's been quite successful here in Australia. Test cricket in England is still thriving. You pretty much always get a sellout at Lords and at the Oval and many test grounds around the country. Obviously, England have really focused on their limited overs cricket in the last few years, so and that's gone up because of that. You know, we reached a World T20 final. So, and actually, in England, I can't speak about the rest of the world, but kids growing up traditionally always wanted to play Test cricket. The Test cricketers were always being paid the most as well in the past. They've now kind of changed the way they're paid, the players are paid. So someone like an Owen Morgan, not part of the Test team, but he's still paid really well as an ODI captain. All these things to consider going forwards. I'm not sure where England is going to be in the next 10 years when it comes to Test cricket, because obviously there has been more focused on the limited stuff.
Kerry, how do you think you would have gone as a T20 player these days? Getting auctioned off for $1.4 million and playing over the IPL, having multivitamin endorsements, your name on billboards.
I don't think my game was a test game.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't have a T20 game. I didn't like swiping across the line. I would have found a way to bowl four tight overs.
You might have had a better chance with Sue Barker, though.
Yes. You got a thing with Sue Barker, Kerry?
Yeah, he had a crack. Haven't you heard that?
No. I told it yesterday.
Did you win or did you lose?
Lose.
Chewer?
I was 0-2 against it. She led two games to love.
Well, there was no love. That was a problem.
And they weren't going on serve.
Chew, the predictor, the machine behind us, explain it and tell me what it's telling. And can it predict, firstly, what the weather's going to do?
Well, it can't predict Melbourne's weather. It can virtually predict every other state here in this beautiful country of ours. But it's saying that Pakistan all out for 365 halfway through the tea break today, Howie. Look, worst case scenario, the predictor's saying all out for 301. Best case at 429. When you break it down even more, the predictor is actually saying Pakistan are 48 runs ahead of where they should be. So they're currently 4 for 232. The predictor's saying they're at 4 for 184. So Pakistan are playing a good brand of cricket. As Kerry can probably back that up.
But I'm having more belief in the predictor. I think that's on the money.
Is that because it's on the money or because after Brisbane, that Chew took your side in the bar one night and said, mate, I've been working for Triple M for 20 years, I built a brand, and within the space of one 20-minute session, you nearly tore it to pieces.
I trashed it, I know.
You did.
Yeah.
I was going to say, if you've actually seen the receipt in terms of how much money Triple M have actually paid for the predictor.
Oh, really?
I think you'll have a firm belief.
Okay. Well, yeah. I'm a believer.
The delay continues at the Triple MCG. The lights are on, and for about the fifth time, the heavy covers were removed, and they're being put back on the ground. Mark Howard with you, Darren Berry, Mick Molloy. Frustrating, gentlemen. Frustrating.
Thanks a lot, Nature.
Yes.
Thanks for nothing.
Come on, Chuck. What can you do? You're a big Victorian.
It's offering nothing. Mick and I are out the back, and we thought, we're on. We're actually on, and the cricket is on, and just as we speak, sorry for
our listeners. We're like caged tigers trying to work out how to get involved. Do you know what? I remember this, guys, from Wimbledon. When in Wimbledon one year, they had a rain delay, and Cliff Richard was there, and he was sitting in the stands, and they had the covers out, and they were sitting there, and Cliff Richard started singing.
He did.
And you could see the look on everyone's faces in that arena as they went, gee, I hope this weather breaks soon.
That's what we need. Maybe we need to call on Warnie next door to get Chris Martin to come out and do a bit of Coldplay in the
maybe something more culturally specific to us. Maybe a Kevin Bloody Wilson.
You know who I think we should call upon? The former Australian Test captain, Ricky
Give him
Ponte.
A call.
Now, I've heard he sang up a storm with you the other night. Is this what you're referring to?
What happened? Stuart Broad was bowling, and I was asking Ricky Ponting and Mark Waugh about how you deal with getting a lot of sledging from the crowd.
Yes.
And Junior said, listen, the Barmy Army used to give it to me, and there was a certain song, and I asked him what it was. He said, no, I can't remember it. And then Ricky Ponting was sitting beside him. Now, you must remember when Ricky came into Channel 10 for the first time and the security guard called him Rocky Ponting, we got off to a really, really, really rough start. We were all A, in awe, which we still are, and B, scared of Ricky Ponting. We'd never done cricket before at the network. Ricky Ponting's Ricky Ponting. And he came on air. We didn't really know him. Lovely chap, as you would know, Chuck, when you get to know him.
Yep.
But there's an exterior to Ricky Ponting, as there is with most Australian captains. So 3 years ago, it was, wow, he's Ricky Ponting. Three nights ago, he started singing on national television.
The guard blew up. Went down, Mick. He dropped the guard.
The guard is gone. He blew up the internet a la Kim Kardashian, singing a song that the Barmy Army used to sing in the Ashes about Mark Waugh. Listen to the words carefully. If you know anything about Mark's backstory.
Is this libelous?
Well, it is libelous. He had a little issue with a bookie, him, Warnie, the ACB. Anyway, Ricky all of a sudden burst into song.
Michael is an Aussie, he wears a baggy hat. When he saw the bookie's cash, he said, I'm having that.
He got a good memory.
Shared it out with Warnie, they went and had some beers. And when the ACB found out, they covered up for years. Michael is an
You know, word for word. You are kidding.
Unscripted, magnificent.
Oh. You got about halfway into that Ricky Ponting before he reckons, I'm not sure.
Am I doing this?
I'm not sure where this is going.
Am I doing this?
And it was a bit awkward for a touch, but Mark Waugh did the right thing and went with it.
He did. My highlight of the Big Bash in the history of the game. Nellie Meadows
can probably do a bit of singing and dancing. Dieter's going. There's another update, please.
I'm an appalling singer. That is definitely not one of my talents.
I can vouch for that.
And at the moment, if I did sing, it would be singing in the rain, unfortunately. It's still spitting. It keeps stopping, and then it spits, and then it builds, and then it stops again. At the moment, the heavy covers are on. The officials are not on the ground as they were supposed to be a minute ago for a pitch inspection. So that's not great news. The pitch inspection is not happening as we wanted it to a minute ago. So it's spitting. We're hoping it goes away. But at the moment, it's just a frustrating day for cricket fans here at the MCG.
Next, well, Nez.
There you go. That's it. Not a good day for cricket. The other great Australian sporting event on at the moment is the Sydney to Hobart Yacht Race, which they reckon is going to be finished in record time. I remember a time when Triple M, and I can talk about this, I think, was one of the worst radio promotions ever in the history of FM radio.
Yeah, you've got me, Mick.
Okay, so this was, they decided, Triple M thought, we're going to give a prize winner. One lucky prize winner gets the crew on a Sydney to Hobart maxi yacht.
You're the voiceover guy. I didn't know that.
So they went with this. Anyway, this was the year, you remember, it all went pear-shaped. And quite a few people, there was loss of life, there was carnage, there was boats being pulled out of the water, helicopter rescues. And I remember watching the news one night, and I saw this boat limp into Eden with a smashed mast and hardened seamen who were hanging on the sides, who were white. And up the back was a little girl in a Triple M T-shirt.
Isn't she
who has never been seen again. Who I believe, as we speak, is currently weaving baskets in the country.
She was the prize winner.
She was the prize winner. The lucky prize winner.
Triple M can that one moving forward. Mick. Yeah. It wasn't one they've lined up for next year.
That didn't get a run again. One of their better promotions.
Well, Mick, as a man that's been here for 20 years, the decision now lies with you. Our producers are saying we've been banging on for an hour and a half. We thought there'd be play. There'd be not play. We can continue to talk amongst ourselves or we can go to some rock and roll music.
I'm happy to have a chat. Sure, we can. Why don't we wrangle the troops and see what's happening? I see Lawrence Mooney is joining us from the back stalls. How are you, Lawrence?
When there is a rain delay, you've got to find something to talk about. And we started to reminisce about something that we covered off a little bit yesterday, but one of the great parts of Australian sport that is now absent due to the fines. And that is pitch invasions.
The pitch invasion, which is, and this ground's seen some beauties over the year. Have you got a particular favourite?
Well, everyone's mind goes straight back to the 1982 grand final, when 7 minutes into the third quarter, I think Chewy said, Helen Domenko ran out covered with nothing but, well, a blue scarf.
That's right.
And her winter coat.
The Sydney to Hobart.
Now listen.
The map.
That's right.
The map was on the G.
Can I say this? This is a sore point for me because as a Richmond fan, this is the precise moment Turning Richmond point. Became shit house. This was it. Well, no, this we were it. A good side. We'd won 80. We were supposed to win 82. And then she ran out on the ground and it was all over. And you can tell it's 1982 if you just have a look at the poster. What we have to do is have a good look in the downstairs department and you can see quite accurately the year we were talking about. It's like a two-man job for Jim's mowing.
More recently, one of the greats is Watty Holmwood.
Who's Watty Holmwood?
Watty Holmwood's a rather chunky man from South Sea Islander ethnicity who wobbled onto ANZ Stadium during a State of Origin, and he made it all the way. He had a weird handprint on his buttock like he had slapped himself to give himself a bit of an egg on. Yeah, and people just loved him because he's a larger man. He didn't have much to, show the crowd.
I like it.
And, he's the fear and anxiety had created some shrinkage. Watty Holmwood.
It's a big stage.
We don't want to condone, Lawrence, such behaviour, but the time of Peter Hoare, the serial pest.
That's a very good one. I was here that night.
Cost us a World Cup.
And it was we were going great guns, weren't we? And he's the serial pest.
Serial pest, that's what he was.
What he was known.
Flemington, he was everywhere. Mm.
At the time, was it Iran, Australia? It was a World Cup qualifier.
It was pre-Iran. And that was pre-Uruguay. It was either Iran or Iraq.
Yeah. So anyway, there's 100,000 people here. We were two goals up at the time. And this guy has come running out. He's climbed the net of the goals. And anyway, turned the game. Everyone left this ground in silence. I've never seen 100,000 people walk out of this ground in complete silence. Anyway, you may remember, and Santo Chilaro tells me this story, you may remember shortly afterwards, he actually
attacked Michael Hutchence's funeral. Remember, he had the racing at one stage. Yep. He did the racing, and then he did Michael Hutchence's funeral.
Funeral, yep.
Anyway, about a week later, Santo was with a lot of Italians, and they were going to the opera. There was an opera down at the Palais, and NXS were supposed to have played at the Palace, and there was a picture of Michael Hutchence up with NXS on the wall, and Peter Hall was there dropping off flowers. Anyway, the Italians who had been at the soccer, who were queued up for the opera, saw him, ran over and beat the living suitcases out of Peter Hall. And Asando said, "That's the opera crowd."
The opera crowd got him.
That's how unliked that guy was at the time. He was notorious. I wonder whatever happened to him.
Whatever happened to Peter Hall? 1997
v Iran is the game you're talking about. Absolutely spot on. Talking about streakers, Andrew Simons was on the telly last night at the Big Bash.
Who was the streaker
that came on the ground and Roy just gave him a hip and shoulder and sent him absolutely flying?
It was unbelievable. It was one of the best shirt fronts I've ever seen. And the police were actually considering prosecuting Simons at the time.
Police.
So, yeah, exactly right.
It was a nice connect.
The umpires are out on the ground again. A big guest not too far away from joining us as Triple M Rocks Test cricket. Chuck Berry, man that's dominated here on the MCG many times. You're starting to get a bit twitchy about what's occurring.
Well, I can't understand this because, look, it's not raining. Mick and I, we're sitting front row. Our head's out the window.
We're ready to go, mate.
We're not getting wet, Mick. And they're standing out there, posturing the umpires, looking around. No one can understand at the moment. Peel the covers off. Yeah, I'll tell you what.
Lift the skirts on this strip and let's get cracking.
If this was a Big Bash, Mick, 2020, they would be playing. They should be playing right now. So unless the radar is showing something horrific and our radars aren't showing that, peel them off, get them going.
Yep. Well, I'm upset. You're upset, Chuck. Howie, I know everyone here, cricket fans all over the country right now. Triple M are upset. We're all sitting here. We're ready to go. We're like caged tigers. There's nothing happening out there. Let's go to the highest authority in the land to see if he can shed some light on this. Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull, thank you for joining us here on Triple M Rocks Test Cricket. What the hell is going on?
It's always a pleasure joining you, Michael. And I might say that just looking out there, there's clearly no signs of global warming. So let's put play to that. It's chilly.
You're a massive fan. Would you like to see them out there?
Well, I'd like to see them out there. I'd like to see Australia batting because my favourite cricketer, Usman Khawaja. I like saying that. It feels nice in the mouth, doesn't it?
Is that what you like about him?
That's what I really like about him.
Is that it?
Yes. But I think I made a bit of a faux pas coming in here.
Because
we're right next to the Channel 9 box, and there's an absolute litany of Australian stars come out of there.
Right.
I saw Pup come out, and I saw Bill Laurie come out, and all the Australian, ex-Australian captains. And I saw Mark Taylor, and I wanted to be familiar with him, and I didn't know whether it was right to use his nickname or not. And I second-guessed myself, and I said, "Hello, Fatty." So he looked at me, and I thought, "Is it okay to call you Fatty?" And he goes, "My nickname's Tubbs."
Tubbs,
so
that's right.
Yeah, just a slip of the tongue there.
How many Australian captains did you run into out there? Because there's a few hovering around, aren't there?
I think it was four. Michael Clark, Fatty.
Cipelli.
Cipelli is out there, and Bill Laurie, of course. And I looked and I thought, it doesn't seem to be that hard to be an Australian captain. You know, it's an easy job by the looks of things. Yeah, there's not that many prime ministers. Actually, there's more prime ministers than Australian captains still alive. But
what's your cricketing pedigree? Did you get it
frightened of the ball, uncoordinated, and I'm just here to try and look like, you know, I'm in touch with the common man and woman. And trying to push my popularity up. Chuck, over to you.
One of your predecessors, Mr. Howard, he once bowled a cricket ball. I don't know whether you watched it. It was one of the most horrific scenes ever witnessed in cricket. So I would suggest your bowling would be a little bit better than John Howard's.
Well, I might try and roll the arm over, but I'd get some coaching first. And maybe you could be the man. But or were you a keeper? What did you do?
I was a backstop.
You were a backstop.
I was a fatty behind the pegs. But Shane Warne.
Fatty behind the pegs.
Shane Warne has been wandering around. We could perhaps get Warney in to offer you some tips.
I'd like Warney to teach me a few things, like about texting, and maybe creating some emojis. Maybe I need some emojis. Maybe that'll make me more popular.
Warney-style mural.
A big mural like my fantasy cabinet meeting.
I don't want to see that.
Mm. Hey. Lucy Mary Turnbull would be front and centre.
We've got the Prime Minister on Malcolm Turnbull. He's dirtied up. He's told them what to do, and the so covers.
Get the covers
Howie,
off.
Am I right? Are they coming off?
The covers are off, which now, is fantastic.
Why
news.
Are they? Why are they driving around with a rope between two dune buggies? What's
trying
that?
To
is that
clear the ground of any excess moisture, Mr. Prime Minister? Great to have the Prime Minister, Mr. Malcolm Turnbull, on Triple N as we rock Test cricket. Have you been in touch with the President-elect, Mr. Trump, Mr. Turnbull, and how's it going to affect Australia in general?
Well, I think that it'll be steady as she goes, but who knows? I mean, the guy is, to coin a phrase, batshit crazy. And I mean, his hand's on the button, isn't it? So
well, I must admit,
What I would do is, if you've got travel plans to North Korea, put them on hold for a while.
Mr. Prime Minister, I thought earlier in the day when we went upstairs to the third umpire that Donald Trump may have been operating as a third umpire. He pushed the wrong button.
The wrong button. Which out one is it? Is it the red or the green? I mean, make up your mind.
There's not a lot of decisions to be made there,
It's fabulous down here, just rubbing shoulders with you guys.
Have you had a beer with the working class down in the stalls, well, or are you up in the members? Where
I was
are
just
you
saying
watching?
Yesterday, Michael, that I had a beer, and I haven't had many, and I was surprised to find them widely available. But after two, I do feel like punching a relative, so I've got to back off. Maybe right. A mid-strength for me.
I like you. Thank you
good
for
on
swinging
you.
By He's and wielding your...
He has made it happen.
It's nice to drop by my relaxed chino this time of year. And I'll catch up with you later. Good on you guys.
Good man.
Off to Point Piper.
Gus Wallen with you. I'm with Mick Molloy and Merv Hughes. We're at the MCG for the Boxing Day Test Match, and you can catch us live across the Triple M network on FM, digital radio and the Cricket Australia app. And please tweet any of our experts at Triple M Sport. We've just been told there's going to be a 3:30 start, which is in 12 minutes time.
And
there'll
go.
Be no tea break.
Yep.
And we're getting the full sort of setup exactly how long we get the session times in a moment. We'll give that to you as soon as we have
them. What's the longest? What's the latest we can play tonight?
Till 6:30, I've been told.
6:30 or 7?
I've been told 6:30, but I may be wrong. Peter Siddle was saying 7 o'clock in the back of the 6:30. He's nodding at 6:30.
So it's going to be a 3 hour. I reckon an extra half hour's play, but an extra half hour's to get the bowling in. And there's with Australia bowling, they won't get through their overs. So we're going to be here to maximum time.
Here we go, Merv. It's just come through. Session times are 3:30 till 6 p.m. Drinks. Here we go. It's just buzzed off again. Drinks are scheduled for 4:45. Maximum of 35 overs remaining today. Play can be extended by up to 30 minutes if that minimum overs haven't been reached. So we're going to get 35 overs of cricket. So whatever that might be as a minimum.
Where was the chew man when we needed him?
That was the chew man.
That was right up your alley.
He passed me the phone.
Oh, you're doing his material now.
Well, the chew man, he does a great job. And what he does, he makes our life a lot easier now. Gus, he's just made you look like a genius. Where, in fact, we should go to chew man for that. He makes you look like a legend.
I know. That's exactly what he's all about.
He's still stuffed it up.
Just as I was reading it out, he got another tweet comes through. It goes all dark.
Right.
Some sort of porn site.
Man. He's introduced a ball tracker, and there's been no balls bowled since the introduction of the ball.
We paid a lot of money for it as well.
Now, if you've just joined us, Pakistan are 4 for 232. Play will start in about 10 minutes' time, and Mick Molloy and myself and a few non-cricketers amongst the Triple M team. Hasn't the last couple of hours, even though we've got no cricket, Mick, just sitting at the back with all the other experts as well from other radio stations.
With Test cricketers floating around watching old games of Test cricket, yeah. I wouldn't have cared if we were out there for another hour. It was fun to watch and to get what was going on in the sheds and in between balls. It's a fascinating insight.
Exactly
for
right.
People like the man sitting next to me.
So, what about for you when you're watching you getting yourself the Test hat-trick or getting the wicket in the English Test match that was on straight afterwards? Do you go back to those moments? Do you like seeing yourself in those moments? Just tell us from your point of view.
Listen, I'd be lying if I said no, I don't like it. I don't enjoy it. The thing that you hate is when the highlights come up and there's a few people you're sitting with watching and you're getting belted for boundaries. That's not much fun. So you do cop a bit of stick there. So it's always good to get a couple of wickets. And had Sid sit next to me saying, how'd you go in this? How'd you go with the bat? And I'm thinking, I reckon I've got a duck in this game. I really hope it stops raining so we get back to this game. But, it's always good. But it's always good to look back and have a look at sort of Mark Taylor standing at second slips alongside Terry Alderman. Mm. And Terry
exactly
Alderman was
right.
A fantastic slipper. You got Mark Taylor there. Greg Matthews at third slip.
Bruce
conversation
Reed.
There would have been Bruce mostly... Reed, yeah. Mostly sensible until Greg Matthews had input to the conversation. Then it would have gone off track. But to see Bruce Reed, and a lot of people of Bruce Reed say, well, what happened to him? Well, his body failed him. But I think he was one of the quickest Australian bowlers to 100 wickets, as in test matches played. So
how many tests did he play in the end? He wasn't over-raced, was he?
Maybe 26, 27.
26, yeah. Two man's onto that.
Very, very good. He's an outstanding bowler. Tall and lanky.
It was tall, wasn't
like
it?
Stark. Didn't have Stark's body mass. Mm. So we had, of Bruce Reid, just remember him, tall and skinny. Okay. At the skin folds, he was the Australian player that carried most body fat.
You're kidding.
He did not have an ounce of muscle on him.
Really?
No.
Everything was fat.
Wow. Yeah. Just like hung off him. Mm. Like it was a bag of bones, really. Seriously. And it astounded a lot of people. David Boone, in fact, had less body fat than anyone else because he was just all muscle. He was a ball of muscle.
Let's go to the two man.
Just 27 test matches he played, Bruce Reid. His bowling average, 24.63. Merv took 113 wickets. With the bat, though, he struggled a bit. Top score of 13. I don't think I've seen a batting average like this, Mick. 4.65.
That's Jimmy Hicks territory.
Have a look at Glenn McGrath's batting average. You see something like that. Now, Bruce Reid, As bad as he was, he scored 100 in club cricket. He used to bat 6 in club cricket in Perth.
A top score of 13. It's, you know.
Really? So he scored 100 club cricket.
There you go. Man, what was your high score in club
West
cricket?
West Australian club cricket must be very ordinary.
Yeah.
Is all 86.
So you never got 100?
At 5 for 80, Gus, and I just slogged them everywhere. Looked at the scoreboard. I was 86. I thought, shit, I could get 100 here. And tried to block one, got bowled.
Okay, the tune man, you've got Glenn McGrath's batting average there, or you're working through your system at the moment?
Working through the system, looking at the number of ducks he racked up, so come back to you shortly.
He was very happy. We went to the bathroom together, Glenn McGrath and I, and
he was very happy with what he saw.
Where are you going with this, guy?
Were you holding hands? Was he waiting outside the door for you?
I wasn't holding
anything.
Just to
make sure no one got into trouble?
It's like surf fishing, isn't it, down the beach?
Was he steering?
It's like surf fishing down the beach, isn't it? You look along the beach, when you've got the shortest rod, isn't it embarrassing? You just think, oh, I need a bigger rod.
So I walk in, he's already at the urinal. What am I meant to do? Back away? Like I go, I just have the one right next to him.
If I know McGrath, he hit the spot too. It would have been extremely accurate.
The big centrefish is on. No, I went to the urinal two next
to him. This is fascinating, by the way. I really want the players to come to the
go. Well, the players are on the field. The play will start in about 6 minutes or so. And I said to him, mate, great watching all that old stuff with you boys and stuff. And he said, they haven't played my 50 against New Zealand yet. So all the wickets that he saw, that was the only thing he wanted to see was his batting. So what about you, man? What's Glenn McGrath's average?
Bruce Reid covered. 7.36 was McGrath's average. Oh. Top score of 61, in fact.
Yeah.
I bet Jimmy Hicks.
Jim Hicks, yeah, I reckon.
Let's have a go there.
Well, Jim Hicks is sort of your mate in backyard cricket that was not the cricketer, and said you can be Jimmy Hicks.
He was a great bowler, Jim Hicks, but he wasn't that handy with the bat. Is my recollection.
Probably, to be fair, when he played Test cricket, his captain would want him bowling because that strengthened the field. Sorry, Higgsy. Hope you're not listening.
Did you ever play with him?
No, I played with Jim Hicks.
He's a Victorian.
He actually captained us a couple of games.
Chew man, what do you got for us?
Got Bruce Reid covered again. Hicks had a batting average of 5.55. Score of 16 opposed to Bruce Reid.
Okay, listen, I'll tell you what. Down the bottom, there's got to be one person under him. Check Peter Siddle.
Can we put Sids up as well? Put Sids right in front of you there.
Sids, what do you average, about 15?
Let's see if we can get Peter Siddle as well. Of course, it could be playing
now
in this test match.
That is terrible, Merv.
Wasn't for injury.
It was a low blow.
Sids, you with us?
I am here.
Okay, so what do you say to Merv Hughes about that? Because you've got a first-class 100 against a very fiery Scottish attempt.
Merv does have me covered in the test cricket average, but I think once we get it up here...
What are you thinking?
My highest first class 100 is about 14.5. Merv's got me covered. But it will say first class and 50s and 100s. It will say 100. What's that say there, Jimmy?
You sold yourself short with your batting average. 14.76, in fact.
What's that say, first class, high score? What's that say?
103, not out.
Okay.
I've got a question for you.
Merv, did you make 100, mate?
What was your high score for Footscray Fourths? got nothing.
I never played fourth 11 in grade cricket, Merv.
All straight to the ones.
Of course you wouldn't. But you'll find out about that on your way out. Triple just M do rocking. Your shoulder, your back's gone, you go, you'd love the game, you go back and help the kids out in the fourth.
No, nah, that'd be Brighton sub-district probably, but...
ching, ching.
Triple M is rocking test cricket. You're here with Mick Molloy, yeah. Merv Hughes, Peter Siddle. Keep the cans on.
Peter Siddle, very handy bat, wasn't he? A good... A really good number 10, 11.
I've been retired again.
Yeah, I mean, he's still an active player.
A really good number 10, 11 batsman for Australia. And that's about as good as it got for him.
Very harsh. Triple M Beaumont Toll scoreboard. Pakistan are 4 for 232. We've had no play for many hours now. And Jackson Bird bowled that last overs hours ago. Azhar Ali is 112. And Azad is 48 not out. Extras 8 over 81. So they can go to the new ball. Will they go to the new ball?
Yep.
With the wet outfield?
Well, that's the thing. I reckon they'll come out and they'll have a look at how wet the outfield is, because if they take the new ball, they don't want that seam getting wet and soft because it'll make it very hard. But listen, they'll assess the conditions. They've had the tractors going around with the rope just
SpongeBob rope
in the water.
Sense, what would be your approach now if you're coming out and you've got the new ball? What are you thinking?
The boys have to get it up there and make them play. They've been off the ground for a while now, so you want to get them playing shots, make them play. And hopefully, if they do take the new ball, there's a bit of swing around, which there might be. It looks like the talk is that it's a bit more humid out there now, so there should be a little bit of swing, and hopefully we can get a few quick wickets. It'd be nice.
Well, umpire Gordon Ravi have walked to the middle of the Boxing Day venue, the MCG, and we've got
Stark and Hazelwood warming up.
So it looks like we might get right into the new ball. The Australian team are on, and now the Pakistan batsmen.
We're not here for a haircut.
Let's rip and tear, Mickey Molloy.
Let's go berserk.
Let's do it. We're going to have an extended session, and we'll be here on Triple M rocking test cricket until the very last ball of today, and hopefully over the next few days as well, this test match might just come alive. We're certainly hoping that's the case. Azhar Ali is 112, and Azad Shafiq is 48. And Shafiq, after playing so well at the Gabba, he's backing it up, Merv Hughes, and he's looking, once he gets off the mark, Kerry O'Keefe tells us, he gets 100.
Well, he's been very good, like 48 as it is now with Azhar 112. And this partnership has been a real good one. If Australia had got a couple of wickets early today, Pakistan would have been under the pump big time. But as it is, Australia are now under the pump. But with this new ball, Australia will be searching for wickets, and that's a good thing for Pakistan. So they might be a little bit over-enthusiastic to get a wicket, so they may get some balls to hit. But the way that Hazelwood goes around his business, you know he's not going to give too much away. With Stark, he's going to be the one that is going to be bowling at the stumps and bowling quick. And that's how Pakistan handle this next half hour to 45 minutes. It's going to intrigue me.
Well, umpire Gould has got the brand new ball in his hand. He is yet to throw it to Dave Warner. He's putting his hand up for some reason. He's showing the ball. There you go.
There we go.
I thought he wanted to go to the toilet.
Yes. You would have thought if he needs to go to the toilet, he had the last 3.5 hours. But Josh Hazelwood, because the over has to be bowled from the...
Southern end.
Let's go, boys.
He has to take that ball. And the members end will be Mitchell Stark. You can hear the crowd just building now.
Last drinks all around in every bar at the moment. Last drinks, guys. We're back on.
New ball table.
Let's go. You can hear umpire Gould say, let's play. And that's exactly what we're going to get here on Triple M rocking test cricket. Gus Wallen in the chair. Unfortunately, play has been abandoned for the day with Pakistan 6 for 310. Unfortunately for Australia, not a lot of breakthroughs this morning. Quite a bit of rain around. It's been a very tough day for viewers and listeners, no doubt. We've had plenty of fun rocking test cricket. We'll be back tomorrow from 9:55. But if you want to know what happened today, Azhar Ali, 139 not out. Mohammad Amir, 28 not out at the close. And the bowling figures for the Australian Stark, it's gone wicketless. And he hasn't done that for a very long time. 23.2 overs, none for 77. Hazelwood bowled well, 26 overs, 2 for 33. Bird was the pick, 3 for 91. Lyon didn't bowl much today. He's bowled 17 overs, 1 for 69. Smith tried his hand, 3 overs for 9, and Madison as well, 3 overs for 18. There's no doubt about it, it was a tough one for Australia, tough one for the crowds, and the Pakistanis showing plenty of fight, just like they did up there at the Gabba. We'll be back here, Triple M Rock and Test Cricket, from 9:55 tomorrow morning.
Triple M Rocks Test Cricket.